Welcome to an all-new episode of Marty Talks, produced by Purse First Productions, Bob the Drag Queen, and Mitch Farino. I'm your host, Marty Cummings, and today's guest is the one and only Kevin McHale. Hey, girl, what's up?
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yes, this is the end of a very long day. I had like 10 hours of Zooms today, like literally. So,
how are you still like forming sentences?
Girl, I mean, I just had the biggest bodega cookie ever, which is
good for me
all of the goddamn life. But you're out in LA, right?
Yeah, so it's still like fairly early-ish here, and I have not been on Zoom like that.
Oh, let me tell you, don't ever be a drag queen running for office, because you'll be on Zoom all goddamn day. blessings. But how is everything out in LA? It's like, we're like about to go into another shutdown here. It's super crazy. What's going on out there?
Well, as of today, as of when we're recording this, it was announced today that they're starting a curfew on Saturday from like 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. People are, you know, a little freaked out heading into the Thanksgiving week and whatnot. It's fine. I personally am trying to just sort of lock it back down again for myself, because I am a bit of a hypochondriac, and it seems like it's time.
Yeah, this year is literally like, I mean, I want a refund.
It's the gift that keeps on giving, but in all the wrong ways.
Oh my God. Well, I feel like, you know, there's a part of me that's like, oh my God, like the God or whatever you believe in is like really just like, you know what, fuck it, let's get this you know shit fired up. But now I'm like, okay, things are coming back around. Rudy Giuliani's like hair dye is running down his face. The world is getting back in sync.
I've been calling it, like, since the beginning, I've been calling this year like the Great Purge, where it's just all of our collective bullshit. Can I curse on you? All of the collective,
yes, please.
Can just like rise to the top. Like all the racists and xenophobes and homophobes, like let everybody like take their hoods off so we can see them, and like out in the open, which I think is necessary. So then we can sort of clear it and we'll start anew.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited for this next like generation. Like, you and I are like, we're the same age, and I think we're pretty young, but there's like this whole generation of like young people right below us who are like kicking butt. Like, I'm in awe. Like, whenever I go to these marches or these protests or rallies or whatever, these kids are like fucking it up in the best way. And I'm like, oh my God, like, what was I doing when I was like 16 and 17?
That's what's baffling, is that it's the 16-year-olds. It's the people who can't even vote yet, and they're already fucking it up to a point that when they are able to vote or they are able to get an office or hold any sort of position of power, I feel so good about them that I feel like we just need to hold out long enough and like try to like, you know, make their pathway a little easier. And then once they are in position, because right now, for example, I somehow through TikTok met this like 16-year-old like gay kid from DC. His name's Political Jew on TikTok. You should follow him. He's brilliant. But he put together a bunch of kids, like TikTok kids, and started TikTok for Biden. And I think collectively they had over 300 million followers.
Oh my God.
And within 2 weeks, they were contacted by the Biden campaign, and they officially started like working with them. They partnered with them for the last week or so of the election. And it was just – and I got on a couple of their Zoom calls, because they would have, I think, two or three Zoom calls a week to plan what they would do on TikTok to spread whatever their plan of action was, whether they're pushing voting or, you know, whatever it may be. And I would sit there in those Zooms, and they would – first of all, it would be like, do you support twinks? What's your deal with twinks? Do you think twinks this or that? I was like, okay. But at the same time, where they're like talking shit, they're also saving the world in a number of ways. And it made me feel really hopeful and finally see some light in a very dark year.
Yeah.
And to say, I second what you're saying.
Yeah. It's very much like we got to just hold out long enough. because they really are, like, this generation, it's so interesting, like, this younger generation, like, they have had, you know, when we were growing up, when we were younger, like, maybe your experience is different, but for me, like, the only queer representation that I really knew of was, like, Will and Grace and Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and yep, now,
totally,
and that's, like, a really one-sided kind of view of, like, queerness, and now there's, yes, like, so much representation. And so I think these young kids are like, yo, you're not gonna, like, roll back the rights of people that, mm-hmm, you're like, no, we're not going backwards. And and they've always lived in, like, a world where, like, you know, they were born in the Obama years, they were, like, on in media, like, have seen representation in so many ways. So I think they're like, no, we're not rolling back for you, like, dying old straight white conservative.
Yeah, that's what feels so odd about sort of this, like, great white, like, the straight white man trying to hold on to their last bits of power, where it all just feels like, okay, this is just a matter of time, because whatever you're preaching and trying to get across, these kids aren't fucking with that.
No.
And, like, that's only, okay, so you got a couple more years of trying to think this is a thing, but it's really not. If my nieces and nephews who are growing up outside of Dallas in this very conservative area, and they have kids in their middle school and high school who are, like, out. And to me, and they're supported and fine and aren't getting bullied any more than the other kids in school. And to me, that is mind-boggling. I'm like, so if that is happening in those areas, like, we're going to be fine.
Yeah. Are you from Texas originally?
Yes, I am.
Work. My husband's from El Paso, which is a very different part of Texas.
Ooh,
but Texas nonetheless.
I have been to El Paso.
You've never been?
I have.
Oh.
I've driven through it a number of times.
It's cute. I liked it. I didn't know what to expect, like, the first time we went, but it's cute. You could drive to Carlsbad Caverns. You can go to White Sands. There's like, some good shit to do.
I like the people in El Paso.
Me too. And
I
also love the food.
I feel like because it's on the border, you get, so it's not like where I grew up, which is, like, smack dab in the middle of Texas. Like, you really, there's some culture there that we don't have in other parts.
Yeah, in this house, we are big El Paso lovers. So that's so great you're from Texas. When did you get to LA? Did you go to LA first? Have you ever been in New York?
I never went to New York. I've only lived in LA after Texas.
Babe, I moved to try out New York.
I know. I think I'm I think I'm too soft. I think LA is maybe too soft.
Really?
My family is from New England. My mom's from Long Island. My dad's and my siblings are from Connecticut. And my sister's about to move full time to New York. So we're very much an East Coast rooted family. But I think I've just been, you know, in the sun a little too long. My brain is fried.
That Southern California sunshine. I love LA. I always, my favorite thing, and I don't think they do the show. Obviously, they don't do it now because of the pandemic, but I don't think they do it in general. But the Queen Kong show that the Boulay brothers do, I think, what's the name of the bar in downtown? Precinct, I think is the name of it.
Oh my god.
It's my favorite drag show that I've, like, ever guessed.
I've never
in.
Been to it.
Oh my god. I wish they still did it. It's so, I mean, I'm obsessed with the Boulay brothers and Dragula. But it's such a different style of drag to what, like, I do and what I'm used to. And so I always love going and just being like, I'm gonna do show tunes while you guys do, like, you know, creepy stuff. But it's so fun. Like, like they're so kind and loving. And I just, I don't know, that venue reminds me so much of New York. So it's like a little piece of home in LA. I just love it there. I like LA. I could maybe, I don't know. I don't know if I could live there, but.
I feel the same way about New York, I think, as you do. Like, I love New York. I don't know if I could permanently live there, but I definitely, there's obviously something you can't get anywhere else in the world than you can get in New York. So I would like to be able to have to go work there for a period of time.
We gotta get you out here on the stage.
I mean, sure.
We gotta let me make some calls, darling.
Yes, do your work, please. We have some time, so you know.
Did you see Jenna when she was in Waitress?
I did. I did, like, the one thing she asked me never to do, which was surprise her on her opening night. But there, I know. Sorry, it wasn't her opening night. I surprised her, which. she doesn't love, but I waited till the very last second to tell her that I was there. And I just sent a picture of like the marquee and me in front of it.
Aww.
And luckily she didn't have that much time to panic before she went out on stage.
She had to go on and do it. She's so sweet. Yeah. She did my show. I had a show for many years at the Bar Therapy in New York called Stage Fright, where we'd have Broadway guests. And she was so sweet. Her and Jackie Burns.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we love Jackie Burns. They did the show. They did the show together. It was so much fun. I've known Jackie for like, she did hair on Broadway with my ex-boyfriend like years ago, over 10 years ago. So I texted her and was like, do you want to do the show? And she goes, yeah. Do you want me to like, you know, my friend Jenna? And I was like, yeah, girl. Like, yes, bring her to do it too. Yeah.
those two together are just some of the best. I absolutely love them.
Oh my God. I'm like, it's so funny. Like when you become friends with people, like, you know, like Jackie or Jenna or like, I don't know, like, and Stephanie J. Block is somebody in my life where I'm like, how do I, like, know you? And, like, the little theater, like, queer in me is like, I don't know. I just fangirl and try not to.
I've, like, retroactively, because I did not grow up doing theater, really, or knowing much about theater, apart from, like, Phantom of the Opera and putting it on in my living room for my mom every day. And so through my boyfriend now and through Jenna, I've really had like a later in life, like quick masterclass sort of thrown to the deep end of musical theater. And like the first time I met Jackie or hung out with Jackie, we went to see The Color Purple together.
My favorite musical and of all time.
I was thinking about this the other day, actually, where I think the single best performance I've ever seen in anything is Cynthia Erivo in that. And anyway, that's another conversation. But I didn't really know who Jackie was. And then I finally saw her in Wicked when it came to LA and was just like, oh, okay. So you're like actually talented and like fucking incredible. And that's how it is for a lot of these people where like, because Jenna knows everybody under the sun, I've met a lot of, I guess, Broadway stars and didn't know their work and then saw their work afterwards and just felt like the biggest dipshit in the entire world because it's some of the most talented people out there.
Oh, my God. Broadway's the fucking best.
Because if you can survive and cut it in Broadway, you can fucking do anything.
I'm like, I'll always be that theater girl. Like, I'll always be, like, no matter what I do in my life, I'll always, like, be rooted in musical theater. But just to backtrack really quick about Cynthia Erivo, so she did The Color Purple, slayed the house down, got the Tony. Yes, we stan. But then when she had already filmed the movie Harriet, but it hadn't come out yet. So I was performing on a big gay cruise, and she was booked to perform also. And it was so funny because, like, all the theater queens were like, oh, my God, Cynthia Erivo. Oh, my God, I'm so excited. Like, this is amazing. And then, you know, like, the circuit gays were like, who is this? Like, who is this?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, y'all need to just, like, go to this show and sit down because this bitch is going to be an EGOT winner by the end of the year. So be happy you're seeing her now because you're never going to get a ticket again. And sure enough, at the end of the year, she got her Oscar, making her or nomination. No, she didn't win.
Yep.
Oh, fuck. Well, she got the nomination.
Oh, but that's fucking close.
She got the nomination.
She's so. I feel like two Oscar nominations in a year should count for something.
Yes, but she is so good, and she also is the kindest human being you'll ever meet. Like, she radiates joy, and that's what like I we just need that more in the world. People radiating joy all over the place.
Yep, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. Like, what? So the week I saw her in Color Purple, I was in Vegas and saw Celine.
Beyonce?
And then I saw Beyonce, yes, for like the fourth time.
And what other Celine is there?
There's only one Celine. And then I saw Beyonce in her formation tour, like the stadium tour. And then I think it was like within like 9 days or something. And then I saw Cynthia Erivo in Color Purple. And that, and Beyonce is like my number one. And Celine is probably maybe number two. And seeing Cynthia Erivo on stage in Color Purple, the way her voice can fill a theater is unlike any experience I've ever had in my life. And I was like, oh, well, she just shit on Beyonce and Celine. So
did you see Heather Headley or Jennifer Hudson?
I saw Heather Headley in her first night and then in her last night because, you know, I had to
You had to go back. I waited for her to get in it because she is, she's like a witch on stage. She like literally casts a spell on you. It's so good.
She was, it was fucked up. Also, the difference between her first night, which was already incredible, and that last night where she had been living in it for a minute. Woo!
Girl.
Like, just, I was overwhelmed from start to finish.
She's iconic. Everybody wear your masks so we can get back to the theater. Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, before we deep dive too much into this, we have to take a quick little break for our sponsors. So we will be right back in just a moment after these messages. Okay, we are back. Bam, 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 bam. We went down the Broadway deep dive, which I really don't talk about Broadway a lot on this podcast. I primarily focus on politics. But
sorry about that. It's my fault.
No, babe. Listen, I said we need to dip into some joy. And it is after this whole election cycle and this chaos of this year, maybe this little political podcast needs to be about Cynthia Erivo. Oh my god. I want to jump really quickly before we like dive into political stuff. I do want to like highlight, I know like everyone knows you from Glee, obviously, and I like loved watching that program, and Alex Newell's like my girl, did my show like 4 or 5 times, like the best. What was that? And I really don't want to focus on this too much, but I just wonder, like, what was that experience like for you doing a show that was really revolutionary on TV at the time with Ryan Murphy bringing, you know, musical theater, you know, we were talking about musical theater, bringing musical theater to an audience in a generation that may not have had it before, and also bringing queer issues to an audience that may be exposed to them for the first time. Like, it was really transformative.
It was, and I don't think any of us in the cast necessarily knew what the impact or what the show was capable of doing socially. And I mean, obviously it wasn't until, like, when you're shooting something like that and you're just, we shot the first 13 episodes without anybody having seen anything. And when the show came out, we were still working on the rest of the season. And so you don't really get a sense of what's going on, where the outside world feels whatever is happening, like pop culturally, but you don't really get that. But from inside it, I think I sort of was the demographic in a way of who needed and was watching the show, because I learned a lot of these musical theater songs from the show. Like, I had never heard these until we were actually performing them. And talking about these, like, queer topics, I was desperate, like so many of us, for any sort of like queer, even adjacent storylines in any TV shows or movies, where I was illegally like downloading Skins from the UK when it came out there because there was a gay storyline, and I was trying to, you know, just have anything. And for me personally, like, being a part of a show from day one where we're having gay characters, and not only on screen but off screen, that sort of community is being cultivated and supported. And so I really think the show was like a lot of reflection of what was happening behind the scenes in a lot of ways. And I think the fact that our first way into that was obviously seeing how Chris Colfer's character Kurt impacted people and seeing that reaction. I think that was obviously the first sort of like aha moment of, oh, people are getting something from this. That, you know, you get hired on a show, you write a show, you create a show, you hope it's just successful. And then you hope, if you're lucky, what the show's about, that you can actually do some good in the world. And that show happened to check all those boxes in a really lucky, special way. And it was very overwhelming in a lot of ways that the show was able to talk about those things and help people talk or even think about those things about themselves or their family members. And just very eternally grateful to have even been a part of something like that.
Yeah, that's so awesome. It really did transform television. And there's so many shows. I mean, obviously, there's so many TV shows. Yes. But there's some that will stick out as shows that are, like, representative of a time period, you know, in pop culture. And Glee is definitely one of those shows that is going to, like, represent a time in our culture that really was, like you said, like the different storylines and that really shaped, you know, how people identify with themselves and how they talk to their families and their parents. You know, I love the storyline of with Chris Colfer's character and his dad and just like their relationship. I just thought it was really beautiful. And I'm a big Amber Riley stan. I love her.
I mean, if you're not, I don't want to know you.
Oh my God. She's just so beautiful. I love watching the videos of her on the West End and the tribute and memorial she did for Naya was so beautiful. And I'm so sorry for your loss, there.
Thank you.
But that tribute was just so touching and it was really beautiful to see, like, you know, those real relationships that you guys cultivated like through the show as well. It was really, it was really beautiful to witness that.
She texted a couple of us a couple weeks before that. And she's like, is this a good idea? Should I do something like that? And we're like, Amber, if you feel up to that, I know that all of us, you know, would appreciate it because her voice always is a place of comfort and joy and emotion and just, you know, I think it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you can speak for all of us in that way through your voice more than any of our words could ever. So like, go for it if you feel like you have the strength to go do
it. Yeah, if you're up to do it. Yeah. And it was just such a beautiful tribute. And I think that, like, you know, obviously it was so personal for all of you, but for fans and everything, it was just really, it was very special. And a sweet, loving tribute, and like you said, it like brings, you know, joy in a moment of sadness. So she's amazing. So I wanna jump to chatting a little bit about what's going on in our, you know, our world.
right. Yes.
There's some stuff going down. after the show you came out pretty recently, right? In the last couple of years.
I think 2018.
That's it. Congratulations.
Yes.
Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. I wish I'd done it sooner. It wasn't like an intentional thing, but I'm glad it happened.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. There. So, you know, it's so funny you say that because I did a Q&A with a college earlier today and we were talking, cause I just came, you know, I came out as gay when I was 14 and then I always knew there was something a little like something wasn't clicking still. And so I'm now 33 and it took me until I was like 30 or 31 to be like, what is that missing thing that I still feel? And I was like, oh, I'm not a gay man. I'm a queer non-binary person. I don't identify with either of these things. And so I told these college kids today, you know, I was like, any type of coming out, there's no wrong or right time to do it. Like if you're 5 years old and you like are like, no, whatever. Great. If you're 95 years old and you're like, oh, okay, then that's like the time you're supposed to.
Yeah.
So you came out at exactly the time you were supposed to, you know? And that's beautiful.
It felt very me. It felt like it was a joke. And I was like, yeah, of course this is how this fucking happened.
Oh, well, it's beautiful. I'm happy that like you've done it and you're in a relationship and like living your best life, which is so wonderful. How has that experience of coming out in the last couple of years and coming out in like the age of Trumpism and how has that like impacted your life and how have you kind of used your coming out experience and you know recognition to kind of, because I know you do a lot of different work. I know you did something with the Human Rights Campaign, I believe it was. So how have you kind of used your voice around queer issues?
I mean, I think even before I guess I was out publicly, I was always, because all my friends knew and coworkers and all that. And so a couple of my friends worked with the Human Rights Campaign. And so like I ended up working with them because of that. And so like they would just ask me to always do these sort of like, I did Trevor Project and all those things where I was always trying to lend my voice to these causes, but for some reason was never actually giving my full weight behind it because I was not fully out. So that was a weird thing. Don't know. It's one of those things you look back like, why was I like, what? I don't know what I was thinking. But as soon as Trump got elected,
do you think there was like Hollywood pressure around it?
So I think there was this, I don't know what to call it, this internalized, I don't know, maybe it was like internalized homophobia in a way where, because I grew up in the music business and I just assumed that I would never be out. And I had somehow at a pretty early age, like made that okay with myself.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, that's fine. And you know, you can sort of fetishize it to yourself, like, oh, having these secrets and like running around having a secret boyfriend, like that's all fun. And at some point that sort of shit just stopped for me. I was like, well, this isn't fun. Like, why? And I think it probably was because of the thing. There was nobody telling me that being gay was bad, that I shouldn't. Like, I come from a super liberal family. There was none of that. I think it was just all these preconceived notions that I put on myself, that I absorbed from the world around me. And I think that's whatever that was stopped me from doing that, you know? And I think in a lot of ways, had I done that, I probably could have been a better friend to Chris Colfert in the earlier days of Glee, because he was just sort of out on this island by himself being outed publicly. And like,
he didn't, somebody outed him?
Yes, if I remember correctly. I believe he was outed on a talk show or something.
Oh, no.
Yes. But so,
oh my God,
it was one of those things where, like, we were kids. He was 18, I was 20, and we were all just trying to, like, figure it out.
Yeah, you're young. I have a friend of mine who there was, like, a really famous blogger who, like, was about to out them, and he was having dinner with my ex and I, and he was like, oh, it's gonna hit tomorrow. Like he had like gotten wind, and I was like, that's like crazy that somebody takes that power away from you, like something that's so personal.
And I do have to say, Naya was really, she would sort of get on me sometimes because she was like, she wanted me to come out publicly, and she was like scared that would happen, that exact thing, that somebody would take the power from me. And she's like, then they're gonna write whatever they want about you, like, why aren't you doing it? And for whatever reason I wouldn't do it, and I was with someone at the time who also wasn't fully out to his family, and that was a really big part of it. So it's like, well, if I come out, he sort of has to come out with me, because like his family's obviously gonna know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was absolutely a concern.
It's,
for sure.
It's such a horrible thing how like the media, I don't know, it's like crazy that people's like vulnerabilities like sell newspapers. Mm-hmm. Like that's so it's so fucked up.
Yeah, it's and I think like once you've had it happen to like friends and see friends on magazine covers and you see, you know, fictitious stories, you're like, oh, this is really like the lengths in which people will go to sell these things and mine people's lives and then make up, like completely fabricate things, is just really, it's amazing that that's legal. And it also, I think, makes a lot of sense why we are now probably politically people believing things that aren't true and, you know, looking for the easiest way out and the most sensational story.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, like, it feels very tied to how we have a occupier of the White House, like we do, you know, somebody who just like manipulates the media in a way to just whip up stuff and exploit people's vulnerabilities for like laughter, which I think Trump does. Yeah. You know, I feel he takes pleasure on humiliating people.
Totally. I mean, it's like classic bully sort of MO, where you take like the simplest, most dumb thing, offensive thing you can think of, and then use that, because that will be that headline, that phrase, whatever it may be, will be the catchiest thing to the masses, and it catches on.
Yeah, he's a classic schoolyard bully. That's all he is.
Yep.
What is your kind of, like, obviously, you know, we're all very joyful about, you know, Biden and Harris winning. There's no, anybody listening who thinks it's fraud, there's no fraud. Not real. There's no fraud.
Literally, there's literally no way. There's no fraud in any shape or form. Anyway.
There's no fraud. So we're very joyful about that. We have to get Georgia, which I'm very, you know, optimistic, cautiously optimistic about getting Georgia's Senate seats. But what is your kind of, like, you know, we've gone through this 4 years of just chaos. What is your hope for the next, like, year? No pressure.
I mean, I think step one is to not only somehow get control of the virus that's, you know, plaguing the entire world, but to make people see and make people believe that when you take these restrictive measures and you take them for a short period of time, that ultimately leads to a quicker recovery in every other way. Does that make sense? Where, like, the quicker you handle these things, the quicker the economy can recover, the quicker you can get back to your job, the quicker you can be at a bar and we can go back to nightclubs and all that. So I think, because the understanding, or the lack of understanding, that this scientifically proven 250,000 people have died thing that is very real, and there are people on their deathbed in South Dakota as they're dying are saying, this isn't real. How can this be happening? That block in information, how we are receiving information, is so detrimental. And obviously taking that on as a whole is, I think, sort of impossible. But if you can start with this thing that probably by the end of next year will impact almost every group of people, family, a group of friends, whatever it may be, that makes me hopeful that people will start to at least believe the things that Biden and his administration will be putting out. Because if you don't have any sort of trust, obviously almost 80 million people voted for Biden, so you have a good swath of people who are on board, but you have a lot of other people who aren't on board, and I don't think you can waste your time trying to, you know, debate every QAnoner, because that's, you're just, if you're not using logic to begin with, and there's no way to use logic against them. But I think if you prove by your actions of what's happening, I'm hoping that is something that we can rely on. And I, the other side of that is, I do hope he appoints people within his administration that that you can't just pander to, let's say, the right side. Like, I think you also have to fully incorporate the Democrats, progressive, moderate, whatever it may be, where I hope he doesn't just appoint a bunch of super center people.
Oh my gosh. I know. We need to, our party needs to come together. And I'm hopeful that, because, you know, there's been talk of Bernie Sanders possibly being the labor secretary. AOC was on his environmental, like, team. I'm hopeful that Biden knows that we need to, the future of the party and our country as a whole is pulling to the left. Like, progressive values win, you know? We saw the legalization of recreational marijuana in 5 states, you know, in this last election cycle. We saw every single person who ran on a platform of a Green New Deal and Medicare for All, who was up for re-election, won their mm-hmm. you know, re-election. So we know that these are things yep. that people in even conservative areas are really into. So I think he recognizes that, and will appoint.
I hope so. I mean, I saw tonight that he has chosen his Secretary of Treasury, I believe.
Oh, he did?
And he hasn't announced it, but he said he's made the decision and that it would please moderates and progressives. So it sounds like to me, It's like, look, this election really wasn't so much about, I like Biden. It's not, I'm not talking shit about Biden, but it was much more about who and what are the things he's going, like, who is he hiring to, like, who is he surrounding himself with to make sure that there's so much ground to cover. There was a lot of ground to cover in 2016, and now we have 4 years of just fucking chaos to also now make up.
Yeah, I mean, and so I'm most anxious to see who the education secretary is going to be, because Betsy DeVos one of the worst.
Anybody is better than.
Oh my God. Everything she did was like, she was like, I'm going to do another thing against trans people. I'm going to do another thing. And it's like, girl, what is going on with you? You know, like,
how do you wake up and be like, oh, you know what I'm going to do?
It was crazy.
It's like,
and even like, what was that one thing? She reversed the way that you can report sexual assault on like college campuses. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that doesn't even make sense that you would want to like get rid of that, those protections.
Well, it's amazing that when you're in that sort of position, you don't do anything to make access to schooling, to make efficiency in schooling, none of that better. You're only enforcing and rolling like restrictions, rolling back protections. Like, what is that kind of like? In that, you're in a position of power, you're in a position of leadership, and you're not leading anything.
I mean,
like, you're simply sinking the ship.
I think that that like kind of hits the nail on the head though. Like, she's in this position of power, and a lot of these people who are in this power from this administration are like, oh my God, this is our only chance to ever be in government. Because why would Betsy DeVos ever be in government? Like, she was she's a billionaire who just donated a lot of money. So they're like, oh, we can just implement all this shit that's going to benefit us. And who cares if it fucks everybody?
I do have to say, though, like, so a lot of those, the way ultra-conservative, like, alt-right people talk about trans people, the way they talk about a number of issues, obviously all factually incorrect. But what they are brilliant at and have always been brilliant at is sort of marketing, advertising for whatever in asinine things they may believe. They're really good, like Trump, at coming up with some super, like the phrase build the wall is so dumb, but it is so effective.
It's catchy. And it's all catchphrases. It's even so catchy. It's like catchy.
Yes. It's like, I'm obviously mad at the policy and the notion of all of it, but I'm not mad at their ability to strike at people's emotions, because that's what gets people to vote. That's what gets people talking. That's what makes them so loud. Like, where they say they're the silent majority. They're not the majority, but they're definitely not the majority, and they're definitely not silent, because they have all these catchy catchphrases. And I do hope that Democrats, I don't know who they need to hire, but they need to do, and they've never been good at this, they need to be better at advocating for themselves. They need to be better at marketing themselves, because I mean, I like Hillary, who got off on policy in detail. That shit is great, because that stuff is the stuff that actually matters. However, when you're selling it to the American people, that nobody cares about that. People are fucking busy. People are taking care of their kids, trying to get their kids off to school. They got to go work their jobs. Like, people don't have time to sit and talk through the intricacies of foreign policy and the deficit and military spending and all that. So I do hope there is also some sort of strategy to reach people in a simpler, more concise way. And like someone like Elizabeth Warren, who can take really, I mean, she's a teacher, so like you can take really complex issues and just sort of cut them up into really effective, soundbitey ways and accurate ways of explaining these really complex issues.
Yeah, I mean, she was my pick.
Her do the messaging. She was mine as well.
Yeah, she was my pick. I loved her so much. I just loved her messaging. I loved how she did it. I just loved, she was always running up to the podium. Like, she was just fun. She was fun. Oh, she's really fucking smart, and she knows her shit, and she packages it in a way that's like easy to digest, which I think is really important for people, like working people, you know, when you're especially like, I always try to like relate it to you know, how can I, you know, so I'm running for city council. So I always try to,
yeah,
to like think of, okay, like I have like pages and pages of policy and stuff that we like, you know, are always like talking mm-hmm. about and stuff, but it's important to know that information, obviously, because when I'm a legislator or when somebody's the president, they have to know that stuff, of course.
Yeah, like that's what you're getting elected for, yeah, is to be able for that knowledge and be able to implement.
But I try, yeah, but I try to know also, like, okay, there's like a single mom who lives down the hall from me who's raising four kids. She doesn't have time, like, and this is a real woman who lives in my hallway. She's very sweet, but like, she doesn't have time to hear about that. She just needs to know, okay, am I going to make sure that like, her, she has childcare, access to childcare, and her kids are going to have like access to healthcare, and that she's going to be able to, you know, like have union yep. work to put food on the table, you know, like that's what she cares about. And so I try to package it, and we do all of our policy stuff when we release like in bullet points, like, okay, like this is boom, 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 boom. And then if you want to read up more on it, obviously like it's there, but you know, let's package it in a way that's accessible and easy for people who are really fucking busy.
Yeah, and it's not an easy thing to do. It is such a skill. Like, that's why educators are who can effectively communicate these things are so important, because that is such a specific talent and skill to be able to break it down into bullet points like that and still communicate effectively what you're trying to say. And so I get that it's not easy, but hopefully there are more people like you high up in the Biden administration or the Democratic Party that can, you know, help relay the things Biden will be doing. Like, he needs to toot his own horn, like, throughout the days and months ahead about, like, this is what we're doing and this is how it is positively impacting your life.
Yeah, I'm excited to just wake up on January 21st and have a new president.
Right? Like, the relief, what, like, that Saturday, what was it, almost 2 weeks ago? And I just felt like there was just a gigantic relief.
How did you find out?
I wasn't worried.
Where were you when you
found out? I was on the toilet.
That's great.
So
that's a full release, honey. That's great.
It was a release on all levels. I was taking my computer to bed with me and leaving like CNN on my computer next to my bed. I was like, I'm sorry to my boyfriend, Austin. I'm like, I'm sorry, but I have to leave this on. He's like, I understand. Because I didn't want to miss anything. And I knew it wasn't healthy, but I was like, this is such a unique time in our lives that I don't care that I'm being irresponsible with the amount of time I'm spending watching TV or on social media. Like, this is just happening. And then I randomly woke up really early that Saturday.
Oh, yeah, because it was super early for you guys. Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Yeah. And I was just like, fuck it. I checked Twitter first. I'm like, did anything happen? And it hadn't. And I like rolled over. I grabbed my boyfriend to like cuddle and go back to sleep. And I was like, no, I'm up. I'm just gonna, I gotta turn on CNN. And then I took my computer to the bathroom with me and like left my computer by the sink and had my AirPods in and was on the toilet. And then Wolf Blitzer comes in and it was like, special announcement, we are calling Pennsylvania or whatever it was, or Georgia. I forgot what it was. But I was just so fucking excited, and I ran to the room and woke him up, and he was not too happy I woke him up, but I didn't give a shit.
It's history. It's history. You needed to wake him up.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's so, what a way to find out.
I was just happy I heard it. Like, I was happy that I wasn't asleep, because all my other friends, because it was early, everyone was sleeping here, and nobody was sleeping that week. So it was sort of like the first day where people were sleeping in a little
bit. They're trying to catch up on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
My husband had MSNBC on all like 24/7. And then it was to the point where like we had our TV on one thing. Each of us had our computers on a different network. Then we were like,
yep, that's what I was doing.
Yeah. So we had like the three, like, you know, three networks on at the same time. We're scrolling through our phones nonstop. And it was madness. And then I found out, like, literally walking down the street, I was doing a trash cleanup for my campaign, and I got done the trash cleanup, and I was like, okay, I have to go like home and shower and get ready for like protests or something. And it was like a protect the votes protest. And so I was walking down the street, and I heard this, like, this is a very New York thing. I heard somebody lean out the window and start banging a pot, and I was like, what the fuck is that? And then another person, and then there was like multiple people banging pots. And then within like less than a minute, everybody like ran out of their buildings and everybody's like on the street. So I called my husband and I was like, get over here. And within like 15 minutes, all the cars were stopped. People were on top of their cars, popping champagne bottles, banging pots. It was,
it's incredible.
It was a very like, I felt like it was in a, I felt like it was in a movie. It was,
yeah,
it was wild.
My dad, I talked to my dad because I went and we went and drove down to like West Hollywood where there, everyone was out, and I FaceTimed my parents, and my dad was like, it's just so nice to be able to see people. Normally you see people angry in the streets, and he's all about it. And he's like, it was just so nice to see people dancing, like full on just dancing in the streets. And he's like, I loved it. And he was watching it all day.
It was joyful. We needed that joy. We so needed it.
Oh yeah.
Oh, well, listen, I think you're such a joy, and I'm so grateful that you took time, to chat with me for this podcast. I'm super grateful.
Anytime. Thank you for asking me to be on.
Thank you. I remember, I think we've only met in person once at the At 100, and I was like so nervous and like I remember that. And now, like, so then, like, when you followed me on Twitter, I was like, oh my god, yay, work, bitch. I'm so grateful that you did this. But I don't know what I was so I remember I was like so nervous, like.
Oh, I'm very intimidating.
You're like the sweet,
all 5 foot
you're like
seven
the,
of me.
You're the sweetest, most approachable person. Like, you're so fucking nice. And I was, I don't know. I was so, I don't know. I was very nervous. But you're very sweet and very, very kind. So thank you so
likewise.
Much.
And I'm proud of you for fucking running for office. That is such a hard thing to do. And I can't imagine the amount of work that takes. And I hope you just fucking kill it.
Thanks, babe. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. But also the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And I couldn't do it without drag. It's like because of drag. It's so, the world is crazy.
Incredible. Yeah.
It's crazy. Well, I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. And everybody listening, make sure that you are phone banking and postcard writing and getting activated in the Georgia Senate runoffs that are happening on January 5th. It is so important that we take back the Senate and get Mitch McConnell out. So please do so. And if you're financially able to, I know a lot of people are struggling right now, but if you're financially able to contribute to their campaigns, please do so as well. And thank you so much, Kevin, for being with us. And this was an all new episode of Marty Talks produced by Purse First Productions, Bob the Drag Queen, and Mitch Freno. We'll see you next time.